If I were a starfish, I can reproduce sexually or asexually.
Wait a minute, that's not a starfish. That's a movie star, Isabella Rossellini, in a starfish costume. The actress's latest project is not exactly what you'd expect from the icon of the movie Blue Velvet. It's a series of short films about the sex lives of sea creatures and backyard bugs, and Rossellini plays the starring roles. The second season premiered this week on the Sundance Channel website. The title? Good luck plugging this into your search engine. It's called Green Porno. And Isabella Rossellini is with me now from the studios of WLIU in Southampton, New York. Hello, how's it going?
Very well, thank you.
I'm sorry, did I catch you choking?
No, I'm laughing at what you said.
Oh, I see. So whatever gave you the idea of doing this? What's so fascinating about the sex life of the limpet or the angler fish or the whale?
Oh, it's fascinating because biology is fascinating. It's fascinating how animals live other lives. I've always been interested in animal behavior, but I know that most people are interested not in animal behavior, but in sex. So I thought, well, if I tell how these animals that are not mammals reproduce, it'd be fun. So we did a series that we called Green Porno. It was based on another series on the Sundance Channel called Green Homes, How to Make Your Home Greener, Green Food, How to Make Your Food More Environmentally Correct. And so we thought that green porno would fit perfectly.
Well, there's nothing overtly environmental about it. You're not saying save the insects or save the sea creatures. You're saying look at this strange sex life of this animal. What's the environmental message?
I never really want to preach, and I'm actually always a little bit tired when people tell me this is the end of the world, and you become so saturated by this emergency message that I find myself to be turned off. So I thought that maybe a comical approach was going to be better without any preaching, and I would like my film for people to laugh and then to say, oh, I didn't know that about an animal. And just by the curiosity and by the amazement, maybe lure people in, be interested in the world, in the diversity of animal kingdom, and maybe fall in love with it, as I have fallen in love with it, and then feel the urge to protect it, but not just go as a warrior, just as a comic.
It's always hard to explain what something looks like on the radio. And these films are unique. They're clearly homemade costumes, but very intricate. How would you describe it?
We decided that we were going to make the films and the costume all in papers because we didn't have any money. But see, make do sometimes helps a lot of creativity. Then the films were done basically for the internet, which a lot of people download or see in their mobile phone. So it was important for us to have very bright colors and very few colors, because if you download a film like Gone with the Wind or Lawrence of Arabia, it's ridiculous to look at them in your cellular phone. But if you look at animation, it is the same to see it in a small screen or in a big screen or on television. So we decided that we needed to address a new aesthetic and the aesthetic of the cell, the small screen.
Now, we've managed to get through this interview without saying the word penis, which features prominently in all of these videos.
The first draft of the script was called Penis or No Penis, because some animals have a penis, some animals don't have a penis. And so it started as an illustration of the different strategies, you know, that you can have to mate. But there is a predominance of the quest. Should a male have a penis or not?
It makes these at least PG-13 rated.
PG-13, yes. I don't say any curse word. I don't say anything that is scandalous. I think the only thing that I describe with the same words that you might hear on National Geographic, but the fact that I transform myself into it, I don't know that it's more explicit. But you see, this is the way, I don't know if that's the way you think too. When I read something difficult in science and I don't understand it, I make this process mine. I say, okay, this animal has a mouth but has no teeth. Okay, so I have my mouth and I have no teeth. And he doesn't have two lips, but he has four ways of opening the mouth. So I imagine my mouth opening horizontally and vertically and maybe diagonally. And by taking my body as an example and then imagining the differences, I Ken, I start to understand how that animal functions.
You must have thought for a long time that your sex scene in Blue Velvet would be the strangest one you've ever done. And now you've blown that away with each of these.
I've blown that away. I agree.
You can see more of the green porno from the Sundance Channel on our website at npr.org. Actress and part-time starfish, Isabella Rossellini, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
When Zach Oberzan was young,
I was about 10 years old,
he received a gift from the cable TV gods.
We had free HBO for a weekend.
And he stayed up late into the night, glued to the TV set. And that is when Zach first met Rambo.
Well, look, John, we can't have you running around out there wasting friendly civilians.
There are no friendly civilians.
Well, I'm your friend, Johnny. I was there with you knee-deep in all that blood and guts. I covered your ass more than once.
They drew first blood, not me.
I was quite moved and taken by the story.
Zach even found the book, First Blood, at the supermarket. It was written by David Morrell 10 years before the movie, but it had been reissued with Sylvester Stallone on the cover.
It's a book that I've read more than any other book. I've probably read it about a dozen times.
And so what was it about this book, this story of a Vietnam vet kicking the butts of small-town cops, that moved Zach so much?
How much detail do you want me to go into?
The answer to that question takes 97 minutes. On stage, in Zachary Oberzan's one-man show, Rambo Solo.
So anyway, the story starts with this kid, this like 22-year-old kid, not all bulked up on steroids, you know. There's a lot of Hollywoodization that came in when Stallone got his hands on it.
One of the goals for me is to point out to people that this story is not a pulp story. This is not lowbrow. This is not bottom-of-the-barrel culture. Parts of it are funny, but, you know, parts of Hamlet are funny.
Prisoners of war probably don't come out, you know, looking like Stallone, unless, you know, in this particular prison camp, you know, They had a lot of Cybex machines or something, but...
The show is playing at the Soho Rep in New York, and it's so casual you might suspect that Oberzan was just telling it to a friend, which isn't too far from the truth. The show came about when director Pavel Liska called up Oberzan on the phone one day. Liska was taping the entire conversation, and he casually asked about Rambo.
Pavel asked me to tell him the story. I asked him, how much detail do you want me to go into? He said, just let it rip. And so I gave him the two-hour version.
Co-director Kelly Copper edited the rant. And now every night on stage, Oberzan wears a secret earpiece. And he listens back to that taped phone call.
Yeah, Troutman tells Rambo to turn himself in, but Rambo's defiant. He says, no, I'm not going to turn myself in. He drew first, referring to Teasel, and he drew first blood.
And then Oberzan tells the story back to the audience, word for word, with every pause, every mistake intact.
And Troutman tells Rambo to turn himself in, but Rambo's defiant. He's like, no, I'm not going to turn myself in. He drew first, referring to Teasel, he drew first blood.
Now, behind him at this point on stage are three video screens of Oberzan giving this rant in his apartment, almost perfectly synchronized with the performance on the stage.
To actually hear something coming in your ear and repeat it virtually simultaneously is actually quite difficult, especially when you've got three versions of yourself behind you also doing that.
Director Pavel Liska says he wants to show audiences that something as spontaneous as a conversation about Rambo can be turned into formal theater.
There's nothing casual about the performance. So then what we're trying to do is elevate ordinary language into heights that Shakespeare is elevated to, or any Greek play.
Now, this sounds all very brainy and such, but we're not talking about Beckett here. We're talking about Rambo. Is it ridiculous to put this much thought into a character played by Sylvester Stallone?
But what's the difference between Agamemnon and Rambo? In Greek drama, it's a bunch of dudes going to fight other dudes and over women.
And Rambo doesn't even have the distraction of a love interest. Oberzan says it's universal.
I prefer this story to any other, and I'm fairly well read. I've read all the classics. It's a story that rings very true to me. It's a very well-told story. There's not a shred of irony in it.
Unless, of course, that's part of the irony. The show Rambo Solo plays with your head like that. It runs through mid-April at the Soho Rep Theater in New York. Or if you want the classic tale without all the deconstruction and self-referential synchronization, There's always late-night TV.
Are you telling me that 200 men against your boy is a no-win situation for us?
You send that many, don't forget one thing. A good supply of body bags. Sylvester Stallone. This time, he's fighting for his life. First Blood.
Yeah. How do you change a channel on this thing?
Put new duds in your washing machine. Finest duds you've ever seen. Bigger news now when you sing. D-U-Z does everything.
The new Duds brings you The Guiding Light, created by Erna Phillips.
That's what the longest-running soap opera in history sounded like back in its radio days. The Guiding Light started on the wireless back in 1937. 15 years later, it moved to TV. This week, CBS canceled the program. So, tonight, our parting words come from the 72-year-old weeper.
Is there anything else?
I don't think so. Only, don't do anything foolish while I'm gone.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't think I have to go into any explanation.
You don't have to wonder, Mater, about what Ted meant when he said,
don't do anything foolish while I'm gone.
You know exactly what your husband meant by that remark.
He warned me not to contact Dr. Hewitt, but I'm not afraid of Ted or his threats. How very opportune his going away at this time.
We'll learn more about this in a moment.
Hate to leave you with a cliffhanger, but Guiding Light has finally run out of moments. The last episode is September 18th.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Smith. Don't do anything foolish while I'm gone.
Whatever the economic problems, American movie theaters have not yet had to improvise for a living, as some did during the Great Depression when they bartered for tickets with people who had no money. Hollywood has, however, made the effort of releasing a feel-good summer romance in April. It's a film called Adventureland. Los Angeles Times and Morning Edition film critic Kenneth Turan has a review.
Writer-director Greg Mottola doesn't reinvent the wheel with Adventureland, his engaging coming-of-age story. He shows us what the wheel looks like when it's custom-made. Character and dialogue are more important to Adventureland's success than its plot. We can see where the story is headed, but that doesn't get in the way of the pleasure. The year is 1987. And Adventureland Park is the kind of place where the rides cause nausea and the games of chance are rigged.
Okay, rules. No freebies, no free turns for your friends, no free upgrades, no free food.
So just nothing is free here?
Everybody has to pay for everything. And more importantly, working in games, no one ever wins a giant panda.
We don't have that many left.
Cool.
This is not where James expected to spend the summer before graduate school. But his father's financial reverses mandate summer employment. And Adventureland is a place where anyone who can walk or chew gum can get a job.
James, am I pronouncing that right? James?
James?
Yeah. Okay, by accepting this T-shirt, you are...
hired.
Well, sorry. Usually a more of a ceremonial thing.
James, played by Jesse Eisenberg, is not the Adventureland type. He's an awkward, brainy guy who reads poetry for pleasure and has idealistically remained pure because he wants sex and love to go together. He couldn't be more different from co-worker M, played by Twilight's Kristen Stewart. She's beautiful, enigmatic, and very experienced. M and James are not obvious soulmates, but Adventureland's strength is that it makes you believe in the yearning romantic potential these two see in each other. Stewart brings so much intensity to her part that she turns this nominally guy-centric venture on its head. She makes M's problems much more compelling than James's uncomplicated desires. Filmmaker Mottola had a big success with his previous Superbad, and it's heartening that he didn't follow it up with Super Even Badder. He returned instead to Adventureland and made it the kind of adventure we could all use more of.
Kenneth Turan reviews movies for Morning Edition and the Los Angeles Times, and we review movies at npr.org.